Blog Talk Radio.
The views and opinions of this show do not reflect the views and opinions of Wikicuriosity Media or its affiliates. Wikicuriosity Media, changing the world you listen to. Any music featured on Wikicuriosity Media programs is used with the express written consent of the artist, owner, or distributor.
Coming to you live from the Wikicuriosity Studios in Knoxville, Tennessee, it's Behind the Screen Radio Show.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another exciting episode of The Cinephiles. I am your host, Dan. Joining me in the studio tonight is the lovely Miss Angel.
Hello.
And joining us from his studio in the great state of Michigan is Alex.
Hello.
And you can join us as well. All you got to do is call in 718-664-9735. Again, 718-664-9735. That'll bring you directly into the studio with us. You can also get a hold of us on the Facebook live stream, streaming now on Behind the Screen Radio Show's Facebook page. You can message us on the Facebook page, and we will see it, and we will either get back to you on the live stream or on the air. Speaking of Facebook, all you have to do to follow us is go up to the search bar. Type in Behind the Screen Radio Show. It'll be the first one that pops up. Click like, share, and follow. You come to date on everything going on in Behind the Screen's world. Also, head on over to Wikicuriosity Media's Facebook page. Give them a like, share, and follow. Be kept up to date on everything going on in Wikicuriosity Media land. From Wikicuriosity Media's Facebook page, you can hit up the website, www.wikicuriosity.wixsite.com/WCMedia. On the Facebook page, we have pictures, we've got blogs, we've got information about the shows, we've got ways to contact us. There's links to our Facebook. There's links to the different Facebook pages for the shows, links to the YouTube channel, and links to where you can find all of our archived shows. So if you would like to know how all of this got started, you click on that link. It'll take you to Blog Talk's page, our page on Blog Talk, and you're just going to have to go all the way back to the very, very beginning and check out all of those. You can also find us on YouTube under Wikicuriosity Media. On the YouTube channel, we've got some videos and some uploaded live streams on there. We're working on getting the rest up there. You can also find us on iTunes. Just type in Wikicuriosity Media. All the shows will pop up. They are in alphabetical order. Newest episodes at the bottom. Yep. I think that's it. All right. It is Wednesday. It is the middle of the week. It is hump day.
All downhill from here.
Yeah, for most people. I mean, I've still got another, week to work.
This is true, but the kids and I have a long-standing ritual, especially during the school year. Not so much during the summer. They don't care. But during the school year, that every morning, especially before COVID, because now we're at home, but every morning on our way to school, especially Mondays, it would start. Hey, what day is it? It's Monday. What does that mean? We're at the bottom of the hill. What else does that mean? It means Mondays suck. Yep. So this morning, because they had testing, we had to actually leave the house and go to school and, you know, do the normal school thing. Both of them were like, what day is it, Mom? What day is it? Well, it's Wednesday. What does that mean? It means we're at the top of the hill. That's right. Now it's just downhill from here.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
So I wanted to do a quick PSA because we did not have a Falling from Grace this week, and we were going to cover it on Falling from Grace.
Well, now you can do a quick PSA.
Okay. So on behalf of Wicked Curiosity Studios, and I am speaking on behalf of us, Saturday is supposed to be a day of ignorance. That is what it has been deemed and has been called out in a growing following on TikTok, mostly. It's on other social media platforms, but mostly on TikTok it seems to be picking up speed. Also known as
National Rape Day.
Yeah, National Rape Day.
I'm not
to say it. I couldn't remember how it was worded. Listen, ladies, we just want you all safe. I'm by no means a fear monger. And as a matter of fact, when it first started, I kind of just blew it off because I was like, okay, those guys are like 12. I don't care. Shut up. But it has picked up speed and momentum. And multiple police agencies have now come out and made it very clear that this is a valid threat because ignorance breeds stupidity. And there's a lot of stupid people in the world. And for those of us who have experienced sexual assault, it's a hard day to think about. My biggest suggestion would be just stay home and chill. There's no need to bring ignorance to you. Should we have to hide? No. Should we have to be afraid? No. But it's no different than, honestly, any other day, except that this one's promoting it. As for me and mine, I have three girls, and we will be at home where I'm armed. So please, fuck around and find out. Just
look,
stay away.
Look,
I will blow your whole face off. I don't care.
Look, I will tell you this, that if I'm out and about with any of my ladies in the house, whether it's my daughters or my wife, and you try some shit, National Rape Day is going to become National Shoot You in the Face Day.
Yeah.
And I'm not a bad shot with my pistol. So, fuck around and find out.
And it has been said many times by many men, not all men. So I implore you, those of you who make that claim, be that guy. Just keep your eye out. If you see something, do something. Protect us.
Look, it literally takes me less than 5 seconds to reload. That's all I'm saying.
And that's really all I wanted. We would have, and we probably will on next week, but I didn't want to go too much into it. We just want our listeners and all of you just to be safe. People that you know that don't listen, you know, just spread the word and be a little more vigilant. Be aware of your surroundings. Don't invite yourself to a situation that could breed ignorance, because that's all it is. So that's really all I had to say about it.
Alright. Now that we've gotten the PSA out of the way.
Yeah.
How was everybody's week? So far.
Slow.
Alex, is it cold there?
Yeah, it snowed today. And a little bit yesterday.
Yeah. It's almost May. Why are we getting... It's cold here. It's cold.
Literally the middle of April, and I had to wear long sleeves to work today.
Yeah, I had to turn on the heat for the first time in a month. But here I am trying to get the swimming pool ready, and suddenly we're in a freeze warning. Like,
well, the water's moving, so it's not going to freeze. So
this is true, but
can
the cold go away? I can't get in the pool to scoop the pool until the pool warms up.
Yeah.
Although I'd burn some serious calories. Well, my lips turn blue.
Just go in a wet suit. You'll be all right.
Not until I can see the bottom. Not until I can see where my feet are going. It's a little pondy right now.
But it's a moving pond.
It's a moving pond. Not...
It's a shade of green that I'm not proud of, but, you know, we didn't have the pool running over the winter, so...
Well, we didn't, and due to COVID last year, we closed early because we could not find filters anywhere here in Tennessee, anywhere. I couldn't even find them online.
Yeah.
And so... We bought, for a ridiculous price, we bought a couple extra filters there towards the end of the season to try to keep the pool moving a little longer because it took us, algae was crazy last year. Everything was crazy.
Yeah.
And so to try and keep it from going green super quick, we paid stupid money for some filters. And those were the last, that was it.
Yeah.
And then we ended up closed up early and it... It was instant, man. It turned green instantly. Where normally that thing stays pretty crystal on its own, even after we close it down for a while. And
yeah.
Last year it didn't.
Well, it's because we closed it during the hotter months last year.
Hopefully we can stock up on fucking filters this year.
I'm trying.
You need to go to Walmart.
Yeah.
See, I'll hit every Walmart in Knoxville. I don't care.
Load up on all the filters. Yes. Buy all the filters. We'll leave one so as not to seem like we're hoarding.
Right. And then you got Alex over here who's getting snow.
Yeah.
What?
Like, this is
yeah, it sucks. Yeah. All
right.
Well, I brought my AC upstairs because I thought it was going to be hot. And, you know, I didn't want my room scalding hot. I have my chinchilla up here. It's got to be a certain temperature. So I brought it upstairs pretty quick. You know, I was trying to be on it this year. No, turns out.
Well, hopefully at some point. Dan and I were talking about it. Unfortunately, jobs and money and stuff like that is preventative. Our most important trip this year will probably be Oklahoma just because it's been a couple of years since the kids have seen their Nana.
Yeah.
And, might be the only time they see their grandpa. And so, but the kids have it all planned. Like, they're like, we want to go to Oklahoma. We want to go to Michigan. Oh, my God.
How are you paying for this? Because I'm going to have to take, you know, a lot of vacation.
Oh, so much time. Like, I have things I actually have to do in Oklahoma, so that's, unfortunately, we're going to probably,
yeah.
Not unfortunate, like, I miss my family, but, like, that'll probably be the only actual big trip. Dan and I can get away.
Time.
Do them at the same time?
No, I said you can't do both at the same time.
No, because they're two completely different directions.
Yeah. When we retire, we can't. So... That'll be good.
When we retire, we're hoping one kid, at least one kid, has a nice, you know, decent-sized house. We'll just get an RV. We'll just park at different kids' houses and travel.
Well, there's a lot of them, so the chances of that are pretty high.
Right? It gives us a chance to see all our, you know, tiny saplings of grandkids when they happen and then not have to, you know, overtake somebody's house.
I'll get a small little SUV and throw a blow up air mattress in the back.
Well, what are you going to do with all your Legos, sir?
No,
my house.
Go visit.
My house.
I'd never leave your house. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I mean.
Let's just move in with Alex.
There you go. Somebody's listen, I've already decided there's so far, at least on the mom end of it. There's only one kid that I see that is going to take care of me in my old age. And that's one who, when I leave the house for more than like 20 minutes, starts texting me saying, where are you at? Are you coming home soon? Why aren't you home yet? Where are you? It's going to be Sophia. Sophia's going to be like, you better, no, that's my mom and dad. No, they're here.
You can live with Sophia. I'll go live with Alex. They're all right. We'll visit each other on the holidays.
Don't leave me with the mean one. At least she loves me.
Alex knows all you have to do is put me up in a room with my Legos and, you know,
give
movies.
Him a box of Legos and be like, here you go, Dad.
You see, what I'm going to do is I'm going to buy a huge plot of land, and I'm just going to make a compound for everybody.
That works.
Your building's here, your building's there, your building is there. Your building,
okay,
you're way in the back.
I don't like you as much. You're over there.
Then there's going to be some that are like, no, you're not allowed in the compound.
Right. I'm sorry. We don't know where to put you.
We don't have enough space.
Ran out of buildings.
There's like 40 buildings. Sorry, those are reserved.
I wish we could, though. Like, we need...
That was dad. That was bad.
When
was
our
dad.
Kids are adults, we need them to, like, we all need to just pool our money together because there's a lot of kids.
Yeah.
Pool our money together, buy our own little neighborhood, and just be like, okay, we're done.
Oops, sorry, that one's holding my 1-to-1 scale X-Wing, so you can't really... That one was filled up. And I'll tell you. Oh, that
what,
one
what?
Over there? Yeah, no, that one's holding the cockpit to my Millennium Falcon that I'm building. Yeah, sorry. I don't know what to tell you.
That one's just full of Legos. That one's just full of, you know,
whole shelves in there.
That's the broadcast studio.
Oh, that
that's
one, that's just
area.
My garage for my cars, you know. I'm going to have so many of those.
That's my construction studio. That's my, you know, customized.
I don't know. Sophia is convinced that she is going to be a social media star. She doesn't need to go to college.
Wow.
Okay. Like, maybe a backup plan?
Maybe you should, you know, go to vet school just as a backup, you know, just so you have something to fall back on
just,
when you get bored of social
yeah,
media.
Just something else to do.
I give it a year before she gets bored of it.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know because
I'm
she
be
keeps
a social media star.
Well,
one
say,
year later, you know, not really feeling this.
Well, here's the thing that I will say: as far as anybody in this house. And right now, we know the biggest social medias are Instagram and TikTok.
Uh-huh.
And Sophia can whip out some TikTok edits. She'll work on a video for a couple hours if she's really got her mind in it.
Mm-hmm.
And she's good. She just keeps getting better. Some of them I'm like, why are we staring at the freezer? What? Don't show people my house. Stop.
Maybe we should have her do our TikToks.
Right? She's daily. Have you thought of any ideas for your first TikTok? I can help you with that, you know. Shut up, 10-year-old.
Our 10-year-old is our media manager.
Leave me alone. She's such a peeve.
All right. So, little segment that we haven't done in a while. On this day. The film and television history. So, there actually wasn't a whole lot that went on today. In 1984, Nightline reverted back from 1 hour to an hour and a half, or to half hour. It's weird. I think it's back to an hour now. In 86, Geraldo... God damn it. Why can't I talk?
Geraldo Rivera?
Yes, Geraldo Rivera opened Al Capone's Vault live on TV.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I used to watch some Geraldo. He was way better than Jerry Springer.
Yeah. You know what he found?
What?
Nothing.
You remember when he got attacked on his show?
Uh-huh.
By the KKK?
Yep. In 88, Barbara Streisand recorded You'll Never Know. Not a lot of birthdays. No real deaths and no real weddings and divorces. So
I guess it's a good day in history.
Yeah, that's that. So that's interesting.
So kind of pertains to you personally because you met him and adored him.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear some of the news and stuff that has come out about Robin Williams?
I have not.
And his death?
No.
Okay, so, and now I'm going to just go ahead and put out there that this is more opinion-based, I guess, because I've not been able to find the documents themselves. But what is being said is that a lot of people are a little upset that they used him as a campaign for depression.
Right.
Because, you know, here's this guy who's always smiling and always happy, and he was so depressed he took his life.
Yeah.
When in reality, he had a very quick acting and aggressive form of almost like Alzheimer's.
Okay.
That was terminal.
Oh.
And was probably more likely the reason that he died. And
so they're saying he didn't commit suicide.
That is the talk. I'm not going to put fact out there.
Right.
But media, and so I feel like it would be actually kind of hard to fact check because media has spun it already from the
yeah.
day he died that this was how and this is why. I think that's unfair. And because even if he did take his own life, there were other reasons happening.
Yeah.
And so that was an interesting find. It was an interesting find because I didn't know that. I think I had heard something about it a long time ago when he first passed away. And then it kind of just disappeared because that's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things kind of get swept under the rug. And it's kind of like with news stories and gun reform. We hear about what they want us to think about.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
I don't know how I feel about that.
Listen, a terminal diagnosis with something that potentially, obviously, you're going to lose sight of who you are,
yeah.
who your family is, who your kids are. We all know that a lot of times Alzheimer's patients can become very aggressive. It just changes completely who they are.
Yeah.
And I feel like if that's true, then he was more trying to save his family from something than depressed to the point of being like, I don't want to be here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The narrative is always spun in a way. This year has definitely taught me more than any other year. It's not like I ever really trusted the media, but we have seen the shit side. Like, the darkness has come to light a lot this year where
yeah.
it comes to media. And I don't like that narratives get pushed on people to the point that we think something different of somebody that is beloved.
I don't know. I mean, I wasn't a big fan of him being used as the quote-unquote face of depression.
Because he, yeah.
You know, because, I mean, he was always really happy and outgoing and stuff like that. And he did have some, you know, interesting quotes that he had said
Absolutely.
Throughout his life. But I don't know that I really liked him being the face of depression. You know, he should symbolize, you know, joy and happiness in our life because that's what he has brought to the world.
Absolutely.
He brought comedy. He brought joy. He brought happiness. He brought love to the world. I mean, these are things that he has actually brought to the world. And I've watched, I grew up on Robin Williams.
You know, I
watched him on reruns of Mork and Mindy.
Loved Mork and Mindy. It was like my favorite TV show as a kid.
Dead Poets Society, Good Morning Vietnam, Aladdin, you know. And, I mean, my absolute favorite movie of his, there's two, is Dead Poets Society.
Love that movie.
And Good Will Hunting.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I love all of his other movies, and I love
his stand-up. Those were really great movies, though. They really were. They had such a message. Also, what was the...
Patch Adams.
I loved Patch Adams.
Yeah. But Deadpool Society and Good Will Hunting showed us another side of what Robin Williams can be, especially Good Will Hunting.
Absolutely.
There wasn't a whole lot of comedy in Good Will Hunting.
No, it's a very serious role.
It was, and it was an absolute perfect role for him, you know, because we see him comforting, we see him loving, and we see him angry.
Right.
Like, true anger. And it's just, and I mean, the movie itself is fantastic.
Well, if you, he has so many things that he has contributed to everybody. We have Red Nose Day through Children's Hospital.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, come on.
And
let's remember him for what he was, the truth of who he was.
Yeah.
And not a made-up narrative, is all I'm saying.
And my best memory of Robin Williams,
I know,
will always be when I was on my second deployment to Afghanistan.
Yes.
I was...
And he was kind.
Oh, yeah. I was invited to a lunch. It was a private lunch. So I was invited to a lunch that he was a part of. And it was him, one of the guys from Montgomery Gentry. I don't remember who. And then
either Montgomery or Gentry.
I think it was Gentry. I don't know. And then another guy that wrote country music.
Yeah.
For other stars. You know, wrote songs for country music. And he was literally the only one that, and I will say this every time we talk about him. He was the only one that went around to every soldier, regardless of rank, regardless of color, regardless of gender. It didn't matter. And not just walked up and said, thank you, thank you. No, every single soldier, and there was probably a good 50 of us in there, 50 to 75 of us in there, every single soldier, and took a few seconds to actually shake their hand, say thank you, like,
and you got a picture with him.
Mean it. Yeah. And he took pictures with everybody before the lunch. Lunch. Like, he held up the lunch. He was like,
Before we get a break, one of my favorite memories of him, because he was always very active with USO and went over and visited troops, show he did where the bugles started playing.
Yeah, it was Taps.
And
Tire of the Colors.
Every single soldier stood up and flipped around away from him. And for like 30 seconds, he thought he was being shunned and didn't understand what the fuck was going on.
And he rolled it right in his neck. He's like, what the hell was going on?
So I love that right. Clip, though, of that show, because I was like, he's so genuine, and I just loved who he was as a person.
He was such an inspiration to a lot of not only actors and comedians and stuff like that, but to a lot of our generation.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he was...
He was a Doubtfire.
Everything. You know, he could do anything and everything, and he was such an uplifting guy. He touched so many people. You know, and I will never forget shaking his hand, him looking me in the eye. That's what he did. He looked me directly in the eye and sincerely thanked every soldier there.
Absolutely. I think when we talk about mental health awareness, things like that, when those days come up, you know, I don't ever want to stop telling his stories.
No.
Because he was just he really was just a genuinely good person.
Yeah. This is a man that I honestly, truly love, respected, and honored. Just for who he was and everything that he did for not only the military, but for the rest of the world. All right. And on that note, it is time for us to take a break. We'll be back shortly.
Behind the screen, we'll be right back.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Behind the Screen Radio Show.
Yes, everybody, welcome back. If you would like to join us in the studio, you can call in 718-664-9735. Again, 718-664-9735. Or you can join us live on Facebook. We are streaming live right now. Just go over to Behind the Screen Radio Show and click on the little "Hey, we are live now" button. You can message us on Facebook on the live stream, and we will either message you back on the live stream or on the air. Before we get into tonight's show, I do want to give a I don't like using the term shout out because it's not a shout out, but a speedy recovery to a good friend of mine. And, you know, the typical Army buddy thing, Matthew Stockwell, he had surgery this week, and we are hoping for a speedy recovery. I know this man, and I know that he's not gonna, you know, let this keep him down. To him and his family, you know, from us here, the Wicked Curiosity Media family, our love goes out to you, our hearts go out to you. If you need anything, obviously, let us know. So, definitely will, damn, I hate this thing sometimes. Yeah, sorry. Kind of got lost in things, extra things happening over here. All right. Anyway, tonight we are talking about a probably lesser known name in Hollywood, but you definitely know his movies. He is the director of Aquaman, director of Furious 7, and the director, and I believe writer, of the original Saw movie. Tonight we're talking James Wan. So, he is a director. He is of Malaysian, Chinese, and Australian descent. He was born a couple months ago, in the same year that I was born. I'm not going to say what that is. He's got quite a few directing credits under his belt, a couple of writing credits, and quite a few producing credits. So he is quite a big name in horror. That's what he likes to do. So, yeah.
I don't know as much about him as you guys do, but
yeah. So we're gonna do a couple fun facts real quick. He is the first Asian director to have a film make $1 billion at the box office. First Australian director to have a film make $1 billion at the box office. First Asian director to have two films make $1 billion at the box office. And he did not shoot a feature film in his native Australia until Aquaman.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. So, let's see. He's got trademarks. One of his trademarks is ventriloquist dolls. His most famous is probably Billy the Puppet. Do you know who Billy the Puppet is?
No.
Alex, do you know who Billy the Puppet is?
Yeah, he's the puppet from Saw.
Yeah. He's the puppet on the tricycle.
Huh.
Yeah, he created Billy the Puppet.
Interesting.
Yeah. His trademark is the backwards tracking shot, which means, I believe, Alex, you can correct me if I'm wrong, the backwards tracking shot is where the camera goes back on a track. Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And follows the characters. Characters are often ordinary people forced into horrible situations, such as parents trying to protect or save their children. So they're not like big, like CIA agents or, you know, assassins and stuff like that. They're ordinary people put into extraordinary circumstances.
Right.
So, which we saw in the movie Saw. He's done, let's go through his directing credits for a minute. So the first one that we would know about is the movie Saw.
Right.
Which came out in 2004, and honestly, to me, as a horror film fanatic, was just an immensely engaging film. It was a film that had never been done before in that style. And it was something unique and different, not only in the horror genre or in the slasher genre, but in film industry, period. Because you only had like four characters in
there. Yeah.
That was it. Did you ever see the movie, Alex?
Which one?
Saw?
The first one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you think of it?
I liked it. I liked the whole... like he's technically not killing people, they're killing themselves sort of thing. And it makes people like rethink what their values are and take stuff less for granted. I like how he depicted that through these scenarios that these people are put in. Sometimes I think it can be a bit extreme.
Sorry, go ahead.
Like having like certain death traps strapped on people. But, yeah, I liked it. I liked it a lot. He did use minimal characters, too. Like, there was, like, that I can think of, at most six different characters.
Well, most of them were in the whole movie. That first one was all in that one room, right?
So, yeah. So
it was such a minimal movie.
Where you had Adam and Dr. Lawrence chained up.
Yeah.
In the room, by their legs.
It was such a weird...
It was.
...movie, because they also had the dead body in there.
The supposed dead body.
But it was those two guys, and then there was a dead body in there.
Yeah.
It was such a weird movie.
And I will say, having that body in there the whole time, and then all of a sudden he gets up, just walks out...
fucked up my head.
It was a mind fuck of a movie.
It was, and those are my favorite kind though, because like when is the end game was a lot of time spent watching the movie. Like, what's the end game here?
Yeah,
like if you just wanted to kill him, why don't you just kill him?
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And then I mean, you know, obviously we got the explanation of Jigsaw throughout the movie or throughout the franchise.
Yeah,
but the first movie was just
Austin says the body turned out to be Jigsaw, right?
Yeah. It turned out to be John Kramer.
Yeah, and it was such a weird moment because here's all this stuff going on, but he just, like, stands up. And it's like, what the hell?
Yeah. And the thing is, so at the beginning of the movie, we see Lee, who's one of the guys, or not, I'm sorry, Adam, who's one of the guys chained up. He's chained up in the bathtub. He wakes up and comes out of the bathtub and, you know, gets all the water out, but we see something that goes down the drain. But we realize later that that was the key to their shackles.
Right.
That completely went down the drain.
Yeah.
And it was just an absolute phenomenal movie. And, you know, as the movies went on in the franchise, the story stayed the same, but it was different. You watched them for continuation of the story.
Yeah.
I mean, the plot was basically the same, but you watch them for the continuation of the story. But then you watched them for the different ways that they, you know, killed people.
Yeah.
So. And then, let's see. Dead Silence, Death Sentence. I don't know if I've seen either one of those, but kind of interested. Now we've got Insidious.
I haven't seen either one.
Let me see if I've seen either one of these. Or if I know what either one of these is. Hold on. Okay, yeah, Dead Silence. Yeah, it's about a dead doll, or it's about a ventriloquist dummy, which is kind of right up James Wan's alley. And then Death Sentence, I don't think I've seen, or even seen the previews for it. But it's got Kevin Bacon in it, so it might be all right. And John Goodman. I'm going to have to watch that. So, and then, of course, we've got Insidious, which...
Listen, the first part of Insidious was awesome.
Second part was kind
of
crappy.
Like, I didn't understand the whole second half of that movie. I felt like I was on drugs because it felt like a whole different movie and a whole different director.
Yeah.
I liked the Insidious franchise. I thought it was... interesting twist on the horror franchise. They're not the best horror movies, but I think they were fun.
I may have to go back and rewatch them because I don't know if I watched Chapter 2. I think I was just kind of done with it.
Chapter 2 is pretty creepy and scary.
Okay. I may have to go back and watch them then.
I didn't watch the other ones, though. Like, 3 and 4 and then Last Key. I think they made 4. But then there was the Last Key one, which I had no interest in watching. 1 and 2 are the best of the whole franchise, though, I think.
Okay. Yeah, so, yeah. Because you had Insidious Chapter 2, Insidious Chapter 3, and then the Last Key. So, which, funny enough, he directed both Insidious and Insidious Chapter 2 and was a producer of Chapter 3 and The Last Key. So, he was part of that franchise.
Right.
You know, he's part of the entire franchise. Then we have The Conjuring, which... goes right along with, like, these mid-2000s horror films. Or, like, early 2000s horror films. Like, for me, they were...
They relied too much on jump scares and not enough on the other... parts of horror. Like, I think that's with, like, the whole Conjuring. Even Insidious sometimes. Like, I don't know, James Wan, I don't think it's James Wan directly, but his horror movies tend to have a reliance on jump scares and not really on the other horror movies.
Yeah, they're what I like to call boo movies. Because really the only way that they scare you is through jump scares.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and there was a lot of them during this time. Because he did direct The Conjuring and The Conjuring 2.
Which is strange, because Saul is, like, complete opposite. Like, on the opposite end of the horror spectrum. It's creepy,
yeah.
It's gritty, torture.
It's psychological horror.
It's like a real life situation that could happen if somebody's crazy enough. But
yeah.
With Insidious and The Conjuring series, and even the Annabelle series, it's like, whatever. I'm just waiting for something loud or something instant to happen, and then my heart rate jumps, and then I'm fine.
Yeah.
Like, I don't leave those movies, like, scarred.
So, like, the Saw movies, they're in that realm of psychological horror because they fuck with your head, because they are movies that you can be like, what would I do in that situation?
Yeah.
And they're like visual horror. They're gore. They are gore movies.
Yeah. Like if somebody asked you, what would you do if you had like the reverse bear trap? I don't know. I'm done at that point. Like,
yeah,
sure. Go ahead, take me. I regret everything I did. Boom, dead. But, like, you throw me in, like, the Insidious or Conjuring universe, what would you do if you got put into a haunted house? Leave the haunted house? Maybe? I'm going to stay there because I haven't been able to catch it. No. Freaking... No. If my wife was upside down and, like, dying, I'd be like, oh, tough. I don't know what to tell you. I'm not a priest. I do know how to start a car, though, so... Peace out, left out. I'm gone.
Well, I mean, now I don't have to, you know, waste money on a divorce lawyer, so there's that.
Yeah. Like, I don't know what to tell you.
I'm
tough
just
situation.
Yeah, so he directed Insidious Chapter 2 and The Conjuring 2. He also, kind of outside of his lane, he directed Furious 7, which...
is strange. Like, this was, like, his first step outside of the horror genre. Like, his first big step.
Yeah.
I don't think that should have been a Furious movie, or a Fast and Furious movie.
So, I actually kind of like this one, because it introduced us to Deckard Shaw, played by Jason Statham.
Yeah.
This was
the logic
one...
and physics went out the window on this one.
I mean, logic and physics went out the window in Fast and Furious in the first one.
Yeah, but it's not like Rock being in the hospital for 2 weeks with a broken arm and then just being able to break out of his cast. Like, no, that arm's still shattered. Like, you can't use that arm anymore. You're not a superhero, pal.
Yeah, but...
Oh, Vin Diesel stomping a parking garage down? No. Like, at least in the other Fast and Furious movies, it was kind of, like, exaggerated, but it wasn't, like, superhero-level exaggerated.
They got more exaggerated, exaggerated as they went on.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, Tokyo Drift, probably the most down-to-earth Fast and Furious movie we have.
That's the most realistic, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to get, like, that smooth of a drift. All the time.
No.
But that's just, like, movie magic. But, like, Fast and Furious 1 or 2, you're just driving a car backwards at 100 miles an hour. It's not how that works, Chief.
No. But I do have to correct you. In Tokyo Drift, they did actually have professional drift racers doing those stunts.
But it took multiple takes. Like, they didn't whip around that corner first try all the time.
No, obviously. And going up the parking garage was...
It was weird, but...
Yeah.
Drifting isn't a very consistent sport. If you're really good at it, it can be, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. But, no, I mean, I will say Furious 7 was... It was pretty good. But... Yeah, it was kind of on the reach of kind of out there. But it wasn't.
Yeah.
So, and then we have which is way outside of his
realm. I like Aquaman.
And for something like this, his first superhero movie, something with a butt ton of CGI, I think he did it the best he possibly could have.
I could agree to that.
If you had like another director do it that's familiar with superhero movies, like somebody like the Russo brothers from the MCU that knows how to work around CGI and stuff, maybe it would have turned out a little bit better. But for something that like first try and he gets it pretty good, like props to him. That was pretty good.
I will agree. It was one of the better DC movies. I'm not going to say it was the best by any means. But it was one of the better DC movies. The biggest issue that DC has, I mean, this is not a DC movie, obviously, or a DC show, obviously.
Right. But
the biggest issue that DC has is director continuity. Whereas with Marvel, you know, they have that continuity of directors. They have the Russo brothers. They have John Favreau. They have, his name just left me. He does the show The Diverse.
Watiti, whatever his name is. I can't pronounce his last name, but he did Thor Ragnarok, and he's doing another Thor movie.
God, what was his name? Amazing director, fucked up Justice League.
Oh, Joss Whedon?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, fuck that guy in general. I can't stand him. But, I mean, he got lucky with the first Avengers movie. Second Avengers movie was kind of And then he went over to DC and just kind of ruined something that somebody made.
So I will say, you do have to watch the show The Nevers on HBO Max. He writes and directs the shows, and it's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
But
he's just not like a director that I find very good. Well, I mean, his movies might be good, but himself, he's kind of an ass. But especially with some of the stuff that people have said about him, like the actors have said about him.
But the thing is, actors can be babies too.
They can.
Oh, yeah.
But
they
whenever
can
it's
be drama
queens.
They're huge prima donnas.
Well, okay, so think about it this way. The director that we loved from Doctor Who. Sorry, I didn't catch that.
Go ahead.
The director that we loved from Doctor who was that?
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Give me a second. Continue.
There were so many complaints about him and how horrible he was. And yet, when you talk to the actual, like, I guess, actors that mattered, they loved him.
Yeah.
And his work was phenomenal.
Stephen Moffat.
Yes.
Yeah.
He got such a bad rap, and yet, honestly, it was the best thing that ever happened to Doctor Who, and him leaving was instrumental.
Yeah.
The
quality of the show went
down. It's different.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say it's bad, but it's different, and because his stuff was so creative. Austin said, yeah, but going forward in time when someone can improve, that throws everything out the window. His old stuff wasn't great, but he's talking about The Nevers.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you look at Firefly, because he did Firefly.
I loved Firefly.
Firefly was
fun.
A show that was way ahead of its time.
Should have never ended.
No, or should have ended on one season.
Should have ended with a real ending.
Okay. Well, they did, Serenity.
Yeah.
Which is also written and directed by Joss Whedon. Okay, back to James Wan. So I'm going to go through his list of producer credits because there's one I want to get to because I'm kind of excited about this. And this will kind of tie into other things.
It's not shit. It was a good show. I'm so frustrated. frustrating when I... It's like watching a movie with a bad ending.
Yeah.
It's one of my biggest frustrations. Like, don't leave a show like that. Don't do that. If you're going to end it, end it. But, like, end it.
Okay. So, there's producing credits. Saw 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, the final chapter. And he also did... Oh, my God, I just lost it. Crap. Hold on. Jigsaw.
He did do Jigsaw.
Executive producer.
We watched that, right?
Yes. That was with Mark Wahlberg. That was the last one. Yes, we've seen it.
Okay.
We've seen all the Saw movies.
Mark Wahlberg was in Jigsaw.
Who was in Jigsaw then?
I got you.
Was it Donnie?
Oh, probably.
I think it was Donnie Wahlberg.
Hold on.
I don't think either of the Wahlbergs were in Jigsaw. The 2018 one?
Yeah.
I don't think there was a Wahlberg in it.
Matt Passmore. Tobin Bell, Callum Keith Reddy, Hannah Emily Anderson.
Oh, come on. There was a big one. Okay. This is not making any sense at all.
Shawson said, wasn't it Waldbridge?
I swear he was in one of them.
I don't know.
Donnie Wahlberg was in 2 and 4. But I don't think Mark was in any of them.
I don't think Mark was in any of them. All I can think with Mark anymore is fucking Instant Family movie. Watch it like 50 times.
Watch Mark and
the
Funky
Butt. We just watched it the other day.
Donnie was in, he was the detective in the second one when his son
got
abducted
right.
and put in the house.
The
and then he died in
the
fourth one, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, he got... Yeah, he was captured and put in the vat.
Gross.
I think. And like, drowned or something.
The problem, so...
No, he was put on an ice block and got...
That's right.
Well, I think he got originally got shot, but ultimately he got hanged.
I
they all run together.
A lot of his work is great, but there are definitely movies on here that I'm like...
Well, producing credits?
Yeah. So, Austin says, being a person that has only seen Saw 1 and Jigsaw was shit.
Well, okay, so you have to... So, Saw kind of has the same pattern as Final Destination does. So, it comes... So, the Saw movies, Saw, you know, the first one through Jigsaw, kind of all loop around each other. They all come full circle.
This one kind of messed up the continuity, though. Just a little bit.
Kind of.
They said Amanda was his first, like, protege in the third one. And then, come to find out, he had a first protege way back when he did his first Saw game. But wasn't the first Saw... His first Saw movie, like his first game?
You've got to watch them in order. Like, you have to actually binge watch them because they make sense when you watch them. When you haven't watched them in a while and you're trying to describe them, they get all jumbled up in your head. It's like the Final Destination movies. But they actually do make sense when you watch one through Jigsaw. And funny enough, he's actually the executive producer on Spiral, which is the next chapter.
I'm so excited for that movie. I want to see it so bad.
Yeah.
Like, that's the
wait.
Only, like, movie this year that I've been pretty excited for, other than the Snyder Cut.
Well, I'm going to get to one.
So Austin said, being the showstopper movie and just judging as a movie, it had no substance and just felt like a bad remake.
It did.
Jigsaw?
Jigsaw just felt like it took place in another universe. Like, it didn't feel like it took place in the Saw universe.
Right.
It kind of felt like it took place in a different timeline, almost.
It kind of did, actually. It took place before the first Saw movie.
No. Like, in a completely different, like, different timeline. Not different place and time. Completely different timeline.
So, actually, and... I'm saying this wrong. Jigsaw, I believe, takes place after the final chapter.
It takes place after, but parts of it are flashbacks that take place before the first Saw movie.
Yeah.
Like, there was flashbacks in it that took place before the original Saw.
Yeah. Honestly, for the Saw series, you have to watch them in order and you have to binge watch them.
Yeah.
Continuing on with James Wan as producer, Annabelle, Demonic, don't know what that is.
Never seen those movies.
Insidious Chapter 3, The Conjuring 2, Annabelle Creation, The Nun, he did, Insidious, The Lost Key, Curse of La Llorona, which is one that I want to see, Annabelle Comes Home. He was the executive producer on 10 episodes of Swamp Thing. And now we get to the exciting part. He is the producer on the new Mortal Kombat movie.
Whatever.
Which comes out Friday.
Listen, Linda.
I'm really not that all excited for this.
Okay.
I'm sure it'll have fantastic fight scenes, but I'm just not digging the story.
Let me just kind of put this out there. The first 7 minutes have been released. The first 7 minutes, the opening scene, is released.
Austin feels like this guy has a terrible track record, honestly. And all of those movies you just said were horrible.
Okay, hold on, because we'll get back to Austin's comment here in just a second. Mortal Kombat, the first 7 minutes have just been released on HBO Max. I watched them yesterday. It was phenomenal and makes me excited to see it.
I wasn't really excited in the first place, though. I haven't seen those 7 minutes yet, but I wasn't like, oh, man, Mortal Kombat. Like, I could care less for the games, to be honest. I haven't played very many of them.
I feel like neither of us are all that excited.
No.
Because Austin said he saw it, too, and it wasn't nothing.
The only part that was exciting about Mortal Kombat were the finishing moves. Those were the only cool part. I don't care if it's a hot take, but it's the truth. That's the only reason why people like those games. That, and they can be fun if you like playing with your friends because it gets competitive. But story and whatnot.
And X and 11 made them shit?
The games.
Okay.
Yeah, the last two, the finishing moves weren't all that great.
So, I'm going to date myself. Everybody knows I'm old.
Yeah, we know.
I remember when Mortal Kombat... I mean, duh.
Sorry, I'm over here.
Austin's coming in now. Everybody, let's welcome Austin to the studio.
Yep.
Okay, so I remember when Mortal Kombat the game came out. I remember playing the very first one, and I played like 1 through 4, 1 through 5. When it first came out, it was such a hit because it was such a violent game, especially the finishing move. And it was the hit game.
So what I just heard was my point is proven right. People only like those because it's violent and stuff like that. I think that's going
to
be the
same with
the movie.
I used to play Mortal Kombat.
People are only going to like the movie because the fight scenes are cool and it's a live-action video game movie.
Yeah, it's the same thing with Super Smash Bros. It's almost the opposite. They liked it because of just the competition it brings.
So, hold on. Because when Mortal Kombat came out, it was the age of the one-on-one fighting game.
Street Fighter games.
Yeah, fighter games.
Yeah.
What you have to remember is that these came out in arcade form before they ever went to console.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was Street Fighter and Tekken first.
Yeah, you had Street Fighter, you had Tekken, you had Mortal Kombat. Mortal Kombat was huge in... arcades, because if you could beat people and if you could do the finishing moves, you were like you know, top of the rung.
I mean, yeah, no, then I would have to agree with Alex, because where Tekken and Street Fighter are concerned, it's beating up people, and then Mortal Kombat came along, and the only thing they did different was finishers, and people liked them more. People liked it more.
Right.
So
an example of a good fighting game, I think, is Injustice and Injustice 2, because those games showed that you can have a fantastic story and still have a cool fighting game and also have cool, like, almost finishing
right.
moves. And those movies work really, or games work really well. But
right.
Mortal Kombat, it's just violent. That's all it is. People like it because it's violent.
Okay, you're looking at it from a younger person's perspective. I'm looking at it,
Wait, time out. Didn't you just say when it came out, people liked it because it was violent?
Yeah.
Didn't you just say that like 5 seconds ago?
Right.
Yeah, with your older man perspective?
With the older people's perspective, people liked it because it was violent. Younger people's perspective, people
liked
it because
it was brand new. Yeah, you guys grew up on these types of games, so you expect something more.
I don't expect something more, I just expect something good.
Right, but when these came out, we didn't expect storylines and anything like that. Literally, all we did is, because we didn't spend 8, 10, 12 hours on a gaming console. We literally went to the arcade for a half hour or an hour, and that's what those types of games were designed for.
Well, I'll tell you right now, with younger person's perspective, X and 11 are the perfect example of Mortal Kombat doing more and also giving it a story, and I still think they were shit.
And I'm not disagreeing, because I didn't play those games.
Well, I will say, when I was a kid, we used to go to the movie theater, which was at the mall. Really, it was the only theater we went to. And remember they used to have a little cave, and it had like maybe 6 or 7 arcade games in it. They had a tabletop one. It wasn't really tabletop, but it was so. It wasn't like Mortal Kombat on a stand-up joystick arcade
right.
thing. It was this thing that you sat at.
Yeah.
And it was in front of you flat.
Yeah, flat.
Like a table.
Yeah.
And my brother and I used to play Mortal Kombat every single time we went.
See, I would actually enjoy that, though.
That was cool.
Our movie theater has a fucking basketball machine.
Well, yeah, it was
yeah.
super cool, though. And it was the only time I ever saw a game like that. And it was only Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
And it had 2 chairs. And then it had a screen down in front of you, like a table.
Kind of like Pac-Man at a... Pizza Hut.
Yeah, and he would sit there and he'd play Mortal Kombat, and my mom even would play it. Like, that was...
The thing is these games were designed for arcades. These games weren't... When they originally came out, these games were not designed for consoles, because consoles weren't available. The only console that was available was Atari, and you couldn't get that kind of graphics
thing,
on Atari.
Like, they weren't even made for a console, so why were they made for movies?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm just saying that the Mortal Kombat movie, like X and 10 and 11 Mortal Kombat, kind of has proven that if you take away a little bit of the violence and you add story and you add something to Mortal Kombat, it doesn't work. And then when
yeah,
you take that to the movie and you add a big story to it, a big budget, it I don't know.
Yeah,
I could
I'll
be wrong.
I'll tell you right now.
I'm hoping I'm
I'll
wrong.
Tell you right now. This is exactly what X and 11 are, because you haven't played them. X is the original Mortal Kombat, but amazing graphics,
mm-hmm.
very, very, very violent,
yeah.
which is the more, if they offering more.
Yeah.
And then it also introduces a story. It introduces characters, like slasher characters. Well, no, most of the Mortal Kombats had some little bit of story. This one, they could physically show you, though, because of the graphics. So, like, there would be, like, cutscenes. Nobody liked that. No, everybody thought it was shit. And so in 11, what they did was they turned those amazingly violent finishers into funny finishers. And, like, all of them would be in some way more bouncy, more cartoony. That did shit as well. So I don't know. I think there's so little original substance to the game that whenever you try to do anything with it now, there's nothing to pull from.
Right, so you're speaking from like the gaming perspective.
Well, yeah, because that's where
right.
I originally came from.
So for me, We all know that the original Mortal Kombat movie is one of my guilty pleasures.
And I will say they tried to make
you
it corny with it.
For a reason.
It was funny,
yeah.
though. It was kind of a goofy...
It was meant to be serious.
It was a B-movie. That's why.
Well, yeah. Well, when it came out, you know, video game movies were starting to become a big thing. And that's what everybody... That's what Hollywood was doing.
Which, who knows why? Because all of them were shit. All of them were
I
shit.
Happened
all
love the Mario shit. Brothers movie.
Oh, it was good.
That was shit. I don't think the Mortal Kombat movie was great.
It wasn't.
Doom wasn't great.
Kroll was good.
They just
critically and like
I had the board
what
game
people, did. What the general population thought of it, those movies flopped pretty hard.
They did.
Yeah.
All of them did,
it
except
was,
for the Resident Evil series.
It was amazing how
and Silent Hill.
Yeah, it was amazing how well they did for people, for movie people, like directors and companies. For some reason, were like, man, our movies are getting watched a lot. That must mean that we're doing great. When in reality, people were watching them for comedies. They were
yeah.
they were watching them to laugh at them. And
so,
these movie companies were like, gaming, we gotta capitalize on this.
So, I'm really excited for the new Mortal Kombat movie.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because I grew up with the game, and I did play the game in the arcade, a little bit on console.
And I can definitely understand that. The nostalgia is...
That's the biggest thing. Is
so Zachary, it only shows me Zachary on the screen. Zachary Maxfield says Sub-Zero was and still is the best.
I would have
I can mostly agree.
Yeah.
Between Sub-Zero and Scorpion.
Yeah.
I think they were always like the front runners, and so they always had the best moves, best finishers, besides the four-armed guy.
There was a female that I used to play all the time, and she had the coolest finishing act. And I don't remember what it was, but I used to play her a lot. And I played Sub-Zero a lot.
Sub-Zero was
Katana.
Cool when he
it
got
it. Was
sword.
Katana, I think.
Yeah. A lot of people like Katana.
Yeah. Like, my brother would always play one of the guys, and he did play Sub-Zero a lot. And then I would always play Katana. And it was a little bloodier.
I think one of those things were just, like, obviously they're going to give the most to those people.
Right.
So, like, Scorpion and Sub-Zero are at the top of a lot. Like, I like Scorpion.
I love Scorpion.
Yeah.
So, and we will continue on with James Wan, but I'm going to say this now, and I'll say this at the end of the show. Mortal Kombat's going to be our movie for Sunday.
Well, I hope you're prepared for Alex and I's opinion, and
yes,
probably...
I am.
We could be wrong, but it might be a good movie. You know?
I hope it proves me wrong.
This movie, for me, is going to be guilty until proven innocent.
Here's the thing.
I'll tell you that right now.
The original Mortal Kombat, even though I won't lie. My mom watched it multiple times. Yes.
The thing is
I still remember, and it's really weird because I have a horrible memory, but I can remember this movie. And, like, my head is going to be comparing it the whole time.
Yeah, I think that's another problem is I've probably watched that movie a good 8 times, and it just has no memory value for me. Like,
I
cannot
remember
a single scene from that movie.
I can remember them coming to the island.
I watched it last year, and I can't remember.
Fighting in the outside arena.
How about this?
I remember the...
Climbing the stone steps.
I remember the chain that for some reason was also a tongue coming from Scorpion.
Wasn't a tongue. It was an actual creature that came out of his hand.
It was weird. It was supposed to be a chain. So, like, I remember that going through the trees. That's the scene.
Yeah.
The only scene I remember.
And getting stuck in the tree.
Yeah.
And then him just...
So weird.
It.
Nope, you've lost me. Five seconds. I remember it going through the trees. That's it.
Okay, we're going to move on. But, yes, we are doing Mortal Kombat on Sunday. Okay, so he did do, he was an executive producer, James Wan, back to James Wan. He was the executive producer for 94 episodes of the new MacGyver TV series.
That?
Yeah, not impressive.
No, it wasn't great.
No. He is the executive producer for Spiral. For The Conjuring,
it's got
Spiral.
Chris Rock
yeah.
and Sam Jackson.
Yeah,
I'll watch it.
Well,
I want
to
watch it.
They have a final chapter and a jigsaw that's supposed to close it up, and they're still making another movie.
For sure.
Yeah, it's from the Book of Saw. Yeah. know. They said it was supposed to be a remake, but it's also supposed to be along with, I don't know.
Well, the next movie after that better be called The Book of Solomon, spelled
Solomon.
Next movie called Twist instead of Spiral.
God. So he is the producer for Aquaman 2, and I believe,
I'll watch
if I'm not
it.
Mistaken, he is the director for Aquaman 2. It's in pre-production.
It's going to stay in pre-production for a while, because apparently woman, whatever,
he's working out the
is, was like getting arrested or something.
What?
Yeah.
Amber Heard?
Yeah.
We're gonna have to research this.
I don't actually. I don't feel bad about that.
Well, she was like pressed with like charges or something.
Good.
Went
is that not the girlfriend of? Good.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say it now, and it's only my opinion. It is not the opinion of Wicked Curiosity Media. Fuck Amber Heard.
Yeah. No. She doesn't think
the opinions of this show do not reflect the views and opinions of Wiki Curiosity Media or its affiliates.
Yeah,
there
we go.
If she's Aquaman 2, I will love every essence of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck
okay.
her. Don't give a shit.
Some movie called Megan, which is a pre-production. Dylan Dog, The Tommyknockers, The Nun 2, The Crooked Man, writer. And then a TV miniseries called Aquaman, King of Atlantis.
What is Archive 81?
God,
dude. It's a TV series.
Yeah.
It's in filming.
So, Knight Rider, is that like a movie?
I don't know. It's announced.
Oh,
there's
God.
So, there's so
see
many.
If I can get anything.
That's so many shit.
I don't really have any inclination to watch The Nun or The Nun 2.
Feature film based on the 1982 TV series.
I used to love The Knight Rider. But
so the remake of the fucking... the remake of the TV series that came out like a few years ago where they had the kit as a Mustang.
It was stupid.
It was crap.
I watched probably like 4 episodes of it, trying to get into it.
So I already put that on that part of the track.
I could not get into it. It was a horrible show.
Okay. Couple things about, back to James Wan. Couple things about James Wan. He is a member of the unofficial Splat Pack, which is a term coined by film historian Alan Jones. Damn it. Alan Jones in Total Film Magazine for the modern wave of directors making brutally violent horror films.
Okay.
The other members are, and I'm going to go through each one of these directors.
Okay.
Say what they're known for. The other members are Alexander Asia. Darren Lynn
Boseman,
Neil Marshall, Greg McLean, Eli Roth, Lee Winnell, and Rob Zombie. We obviously know Eli Roth and Rob Zombie.
Yeah,
Eli
I
Roth.
I don't think this person is compared to them whenever it comes to brutally violent.
Saw was pretty brutal.
There was a lot of off-camera.
No, because you got further to the Saw movies, it definitely became more brutally violent.
Yeah, no, it definitely didn't have somebody getting their rib cage ripped open.
Right.
You
mean the question mark one?
Huh?
You mean the question mark one where she dug into his stomach?
No, you need to watch all the Saw movies.
There's a trap. It's called like the...
I can safely say that doesn't need to be on my mind.
I don't remember what the trap is called. It's like Angel something, but it's like hooks that are attached to the guy's rib cage. I think it might be a female.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then it splits open, and it rips open their rib cage, and their organs just fall out. And
I can safely say that I'm not going to dedicate 18 hours to
this. Okay, so Alexander Asia.
God damn, dude.
Whatever. Okay, so what we would know him for would be High Tension.
Nope.
The Hills Have Eyes.
Okay.
Remake.
Okay.
Oh.
And Piranha 3D.
Yeah.
God damn.
So these seem like more like independent type people, except maybe Eli Roth.
So Darren Lynn Bozeman is best known for directing Saw 2 and 3 and 4.
So those don't even go under Mr. Other Person's.
No, he was a producer.
Track record.
Yeah, he was a producer.
This is the Splat Pack is for directors, right?
No, it's just the people that have their deep hands.
Oh, I mean, no, it says for directors.
Okay.
Making brutally violent horror.
So those aren't his credits.
No.
No, but
so what is he known for? Brutal.
The first Saw movie.
Yeah.
We didn't see Death Silence or Death Sentence. And then you and then Darren is also known for Repo: The Genetic Opera, which is
actually interesting. That was an interesting movie.
It's one of my favorite independent films.
It is interesting. I'll say that.
Yeah. He was the director of Spiral.
Okay.
Great.
So, then we have Neil Marshall, who is known for The Descent.
That was a weird one.
Yeah. He did 2 episodes of Game of Thrones, 2 episodes of Constantine, Tales of Halloween, and the new Hellboy.
Isn't Tales of Halloween the third one?
No, Tales of Halloween is its own separate movie.
Again, I feel like these are more like independent.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Eli Roth
and
Rob Zombie.
Beard of Halloween is the third one, isn't it?
That's a, no, Spirit of Halloween is a store.
That's Spirit of Halloween. Not Spirit of Halloween.
What?
Of makes a difference. That's the trademark.
Okay. Greg McLean, known for directing Wolf Creek.
I think I was Season of the Witch, Austin.
Yes.
Okay.
I was just saying, if they're going under that credit, that's a shit. That's shit.
Wolf Creek 2, and The Belko Experiment.
Wow, that movie.
You already saw that.
You saw The Belko Experiment. You saw it with me.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that movie was pretty fucked up.
It was about the office workers back in that building.
That was a fucked up movie.
Yeah, it was badass.
Really liked that movie.
There's another movie like that. The Asian guy from Walking Dead's in it. It's like
a disease
outbreak in a building, and I think
you're
it's like
about
temporary.
Quarantine?
No.
Or right?
Well, I don't know. No.
Okay.
No, this takes place in an office building, and this guy, he like goes to work. I think he's like a lawyer, and then he gets this disease, and it makes you like super aggressive, and people are just killing each other in this office building.
I think I just, yeah, is it not called Rewind?
Because
I was just thinking of something similar, and that's, you just described the same thing.
Well,
that's probably like 70 movies. All
right, we'll move on.
It's called Mayhem.
Okay.
Oh.
Might have to
talk about 48
days. It's got Samara Weaving in it, too.
Lee Whannell.
You just skipped over Eli Roth?
I'm going to get back to both of them.
Okay.
I've got these guys up here. Okay. So Lee Whannell is known for directing Insidious Chapter 3 and the 2020 version of The Invisible Man. Those are the 2 that we would know him from.
Mm-hmm.
He's also directing the remake of Escape from New York and Wolfman. Funny enough, he has a bunch of acting credit. He was in The Matrix Reloaded. He was in Saw. He was Adam. He was the guy in the bathtub in Saw.
Okay.
Same thing with Saw 3. He was Adam. He also played in Insidious. He played in Chapter 2, Insidious Chapter 2. Insidious Chapter 3, The Bye-Bye Man, and he was in Aquaman. So he was a cargo pilot in Aquaman. Then, of course, we go to Eli Roth, who is one of my absolute... Okay, so he's one of my favorite horror directors. Everybody knows him from Cabin Fever and Hostel.
Two movies I willingly said no to watching.
He also directed Hostel Part 2.
I watched Hostel for the first time there. Not going to lie. I didn't like it at all.
Not going to lie. I heard the movie. Not going to lie. Didn't like it at all.
I like it.
I know.
He also did The Green Inferno.
Oh, God, dude. His track record.
Knock Knock.
Is this like a police record? Like, God.
Death Wish. And then, surprisingly, he directed The House with the Clock in Its Walls.
I actually like that.
I absolutely love Eli Roth. I love...
He murdered a baby, ran over a dog, and also he's the creator of Disney.
his producing credits, obviously, is just, like, extensive. So we're not going to go through those because it's not this movie or this show. And then, of course, there's Rob Zombie, who, I mean, we all know is one of my favorites. One of my favorite ultimate horror movie directors. House of a Thousand Corpses, Devil's Rejects, Halloween, Halloween 2, The Haunted World of El Super Visto, Lords of Salem, 31, Three from Hell, and then all of his music videos.
I can safely say that he's an okay director. I think a lot of the stuff he does is unnecessary.
He does it because he can.
Yeah.
That's why he does it to... he does it because the big studios won't allow it.
He does it because he has money and he's basically saying, fuck you. Making movies.
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah.
But that's just not my type of movies.
Right. And
out of all the people, he's okay, but like I just don't like the movies.
Right. And that's understandable. I mean, that's not your genre. I'm a big, huge horror movie fanatic.
Yeah. It's not that I'm squeamish, I just don't like gore. If it's unnecessary, then I don't see the point.
Okay, a couple more interesting facts about James Wan. His overall deal at New Line Cinema, or at New Line, includes an option to develop and produce modest-budget science fiction, horror, and comedy films via his Atomic Monster production company.
I have no idea what you just said.
So he has a deal with New Line.
Yeah.
That gives him the option to develop and produce, not top of the line budget movies like Insidious and The Conjuring and stuff like that, but lesser budget movies under his production company called Atomic Monster. He is the second director in history to have two films that were not in the same franchise reach $1 billion at the box office. They were Aquaman and Furious 7. The first director to achieve that feat was, surprise, surprise, James Cameron with Titanic and Avatar.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, obviously.
I thought we were talking about, specific genres. In general, they reached $1 billion.
So, a couple of his personal quotes, which I actually kind of find pretty cool. So, talking about the movie Saw, this was a direct quote from him. That was part of my aesthetic that I was going for. I wanted to make the film really claustrophobic. And one way I was going to do that was every time we go to a new location, I'm not going to set it up using an establishing shot. You don't see a house and then cut to the inside of the house. You cut to inside, to inside, to inside. And that's pretty much how he did, how all the movies kind of ran. They were all done in rooms, very small sets, very small. The Saw movies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, not his movies. The Saw movies.
I was about to say, because that's not how they did. That's not how he did Insidious.
No.
Insidious had a very long establishing shot.
Yeah. No, he's talking about the Saw movie.
Okay.
Which is true, because it's literally the main set was in a room, just a very small room with a sink and a tub and a toilet.
Yeah.
And then you
There's
have...
There's one establishing shot I can think of in Saw, the first one. It was the shot of the warehouse that Danny Glover and the Asian guy, the two detectives, they go to. They definitely like showed a like outside big shot of that, and then immediately
right.
inside.
Right, but it's focusing on the characters, not on the location.
Yeah.
So, another quote of his. We think craft is important, and the irony has always been that horror may be disregarded by critics, but often they are the best made movies you're going to find in terms of craft. You can't scare people if they see the scenes. This is actually very true. When you have like action movies and stuff like that, little minor details can be overlooked. When you have a creature, especially when you're using practical effects, if there's an imperfection there, you lose the whole aesthetic of the movie.
Yeah. I'm not going to say that horror movies are the best movies, but I do think that each genre requires its own tools. I think that each genre of movies requires different tools, and if you're not ready to present those tools, then it's not going to be a good movie.
And I agree, but I kind of agree.
I think the Insidious and the Conjuring series are perfect examples of not using those tools correctly. The only tools they really use is
true.
Quietness and jump scares.
I agree.
The sets are amazing, though.
Right.
Except
in Insidious. I really have a hard time with that
movie.
Well, the Insidious isn't meant to be a... okay, hang on. Is Insidious the one where they go to the dream realm, or is Insidious the one where the boogeyman's killing people?
Insidious is the one where the kid is in a coma, and he's technically in the dream world, and his dad is in it with him.
That one's not even meant to be a horror movie. That one's
no, it's
scary.
Not. My problem with it was that it was I was super interested in it, and it was a great movie through this
jump scares in it though.
Through the entire first half, and then suddenly the movie literally switched, and it became something different, and it really felt like a different movie with a different director, and it was confusing as well, cartoonish. It was fucking weird. I did not enjoy it.
But he's not saying that they are the best movies. He's saying that they are the best made. Because so much attention to detail has to go into...
Even the Insidious, I wouldn't even say that, because it goes from these beautiful sets to this CGI foggy rooms with almost nothing in it.
Right, and I'm not defending Insidious, because Insidious
is... It's fucking weird.
You know,
Insidious is the only horror movie in a while that caught me. Like, I was like, okay, I want to watch Insidious 2. I want to understand why this is happening.
Right.
But
I never saw Insidious 2 because Insidious 1 had left me with such a weird
taste. And can't watch those movies.
I was like,
I forced Dan to watch those movies because she forced me to watch movies. So I forced her to watch those movies because she can't watch them. She can't, for some reason, she has an irrational fear of the Red Man.
But the movie looked like a cartoon.
Exactly.
Well,
it reminded me
when
of...
When we first see the Red Man,
it was only
it's
scary because
creepy.
Of the
game. Right, but then when we don't first see the Red Man, it reminded me of the Red Man from Oh, Teen Titans. Like,
what the fuck?
It kind of
looks like a really bad
first
call.
It did, actually.
Yeah.
It looked like a reject, you know, a reject costume from Star Wars.
Not that scary.
It looked like if the new Star Wars were going to do it, but they forgot to put the CGI on. So it's just a guy with makeup.
Okay. Last quote.
Darth Maul having a midlife crisis.
It looked like Darth Maul took way too much meth. Falling apart.
Darth Maul strung out on death sticks.
Okay, last quote, and then we'll, you know, get to the end of the show.
But we have 20 minutes left. It's cinephiles.
Okay, then we will continue, whatever. Okay, not many people realize this, but I'm a really squeamish guy. When I watch other horror films that are really over the top with their blood and guts, I cannot watch it. So if my threshold to something on screen is at that level, you can imagine how my threshold is to all the pain and suffering that is happening in the real world.
Hmm.
What if that's a current quote?
It doesn't say anything.
It's probably a pretty old quote.
Is this
but it's
pre-COVID
still not
or post-COVID? It's not really post-COVID.
I mean, it kind of says the same. Kind of the same.
Yeah.
So, it's
been the same for 300 years.
Let's see. He's only got two acting credits. Chapter 3 as the theater director and K-Lox, whatever that is, from 1999 as the pizza dude.
The pizza dude?
The pizza dude.
Introducing James Wan.
Yeah,
it's the pizza dude.
Some person got real lucky to put him as a cameo.
So, overall, I would say that, I mean,
it's hit or miss for me.
Yeah. There are some actually pretty decent writing credits that he has. I mean, he wrote Saw. He wrote Saw 3. He actually did the Saw video game, which is actually weird.
I want to say it's good.
I said it's weird.
Best game of all time.
Game of
no,
that's
Mortal Kombat, remember?
Remember whenever I had a Game of the Year edition?
Remember when they made a movie about it?
I really feel like his biggest claim to fame right now would be Aquaman and Saw.
Furious 7.
Furious 7 did pretty good, actually.
Yeah,
well, when people think of Furious 7, they don't think James Wan. They think of Vin Diesel.
Yeah.
And The Rock.
Yeah.
And Jason Statham.
Yeah.
When I think of Aquaman, I think James Wan. When I think of Insidious, I think James Wan. Like, yeah, those are his movies.
Yeah.
Furious
I mean,
7, it's like, eh. He did. It's like they labeled him as a director, but he didn't really direct it.
I don't even see James Wan as like a director. When I look at Aquaman, I don't see James Wan as the director. It's different for me. When I see Saw, when I see Conjuring, when I see Insidious, I immediately think James Wan.
I don't think
that's his style.
Yeah, I don't think you can deal with the fact that he probably got bored of it and wanted to do something else.
Well, I think it's good for them to jump around in genres because it keeps them fresh.
Yeah. Because he's actually going back to,
if you do nothing but these weird-ass Insidious-type movies the whole time, eventually you're going to get stale, and people aren't going
to
want to watch your stuff. I like the fact that he did. I liked Aquaman.
Yeah.
And so I like the fact that he jumped to a different genre, kind of refreshed himself a little bit. It's like taking a vacation.
Yeah.
And then went back and was like, all right, I got this.
So you say Rob Zombie is stale?
Yes. I think that James Wan is, because of Aquaman 2 and 3 and 7, he's either going to do really shit at horror now, or he's going to come back refreshed and do better.
Right, and I'm not saying Rob Zombie is stale, but we will admit that Three from Hell was not his best.
Okay.
And there were extenuating circumstances. We've already talked about that.
Yeah.
But it was, his movies are B-movies at best. They're gory, and there's good parts to them, but they're not blockbuster movies.
There's also quite a few of those movies where if you put them on and started doing them and you guys had a movie marathon, and I kept walking in at different points of the hour, 24 hours, I would think that you're just watching the same movie over and over again.
Well, like, Devil's Rejects was awesome. Do I think that he needs to maybe, like, I don't know, switch, maybe take a vacation, switch it up a little bit for a minute and then go back? I would watch something different by Rob Zombie. I would.
Funny enough, and actually, there's a rumor. It has not been confirmed, but there's been a lot of chatter in the TV and movie industry of him doing a remake of The Munsters.
Exactly. He did El Super Viso.
We're not going to talk about that.
But it was different.
It was. But it was still along the same genre. It was still...
Yeah, I would say that that's not changed.
The cartoon?
Yeah. It was still gory.
It was a little gory, but it was still... It was funny, though.
It's a different genre, though. Because I don't think his other movies are, like, horror movies, which means that...
Oh, they're definitely horror movies.
No,
so,
Free From Hell and all that is not horror movies. They're just gore.
Yeah, they're gore movies.
Yeah, so I don't think he switched up his genre at all with them.
So what Rob Zombie likes to do is, and you can see this in all of his movies and in the animated El Super Viso, is he takes a lot from his, like, his music and his style of music, because he directs all of his
videos. Well, El Super Viso, though, did have a lot more comedy and jokes in it.
It did.
I feel like it was a little bit of a break from, say, like...
No, I think what he did was he
that
switched up...
That fucked up movie his wife did.
I think what he did was
Salem's?
To me, he switched up the media that he presents his movies with. He didn't switch up the genre of the movie.
I actually agree with that, because...
I'm not saying I disagree. I'm saying he did add more comedy to that movie, though.
Right.
There was a lot more comedy.
It was very vulgar.
Yeah, it was like dude's night at the fucking strip club.
I mean, gotta throw that in every once in a while. But it's still typical Rob Zombie.
Yeah.
And what I learned that James Wan was the director of Aquaman is that Aquaman is not typical James Wan. Neither is Furious 7.
But that's the thing, though, is with that word that you're saying, I think you're too much in a moment if you can call somebody typical. If you can call somebody typical, they're doing too much of the same thing.
Not necessarily.
Definitely.
Not necessarily. And when I say that, we look at we have to go back to, like, some of the older directors. You look at Francis Ford Coppola as one.
I don't know who that is.
It's a phenomenal, like, amazing director.
I have failed my child.
His movies are
typical, like, non-typical would be Steven Spielberg. He does a lot of different things. He doesn't switch into your genres, but he does a lot of different things.
But you can tell his style of directing.
His style of directing, not his style of movie, though.
No.
I think that's what keeps him fresh. And he's, like, old. I don't know how old he is. But he's old, and he's still making movies now.
Right.
Because he can keep it fresh for himself.
Right, but that's what I'm talking about with James Wan, is you have movies like Insidious, and The Conjuring, and Saw, which are, they're all unique in their own way, but they have that James Wan feel to them.
Exactly, but they're not all unique. They're all horror movies.
They are, but they're unique in their own right. But they all have
every
feel.
Every movie is unique in its own right.
But Furious 7 and Aquaman don't have that James Wan feel. That's why it was...
That's what I think the problem is that we've gotten so typical that your James Wan feel is horror. I think that it is scary movies. So that whenever he puts his directing touch on other things, you don't see it as him because he's typecasted himself so much into one genre. When he doesn't do that genre, it looks different.
It does look different. I will give you that.
Whereas all of these movies were directed by him, and they all hit his touch. You guys even said it yourself that Furious 7 felt different than the other movies.
It did not feel like a James Wan movie.
Because it wasn't a horror movie. I think he's just become too typical.
Yeah, we watched that.
Is that the one with, what's his name at the end? CGI'd in at the beach?
Yeah.
That's not 7.
Yeah, it is.
7 is the one where they, like, are on the road and then they split off.
I mean, at the very end, because...
Is it?
He had died.
Yes, it is. It is. Yeah, because Furious 8 was without him.
Okay.
No, Fast and Furious 6 is when they're on the beach. That's the ending. And then in Furious 7, he's in the white Supra, and Dom is in the gray Charger, and they're going down the road, and then Brian splits off. Like, there's a fork, and he splits off, and then when
right, I thought that was the same movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's after Paul Walker had died.
Yeah. Wait, I know that. I know that part.
Furious 8 is called Fate of the Furious, where he's not in it. That's the first movie he's not in. Right?
So they didn't use his brother in 8?
No.
No.
They played it off in the movie like they didn't want to get him involved because he had a family.
Yeah. Okay, okay.
Yeah, that's
because
right.
But then he might be...
I do believe his character is in 9 because I do believe they have already contracted his brother to be in 9.
Yeah, I think he's going to be played on video or something.
Yeah.
I've seen the trailer. They have video footage of him or something. I don't think it's his
iconic car is in it too.
Yeah.
It's in one of the trailers.
I'm a huge Fast and Furious fan. And as big of a fan as I am, I'm at the point where I feel like
they should just let it go.
We gotta let it go.
Yeah.
I loved him as much as anybody else, and I was heartbroken when he died. And I get wanting to hold a legacy, but like I feel like we're just drawing it out, and we need to just let it go.
I think
apparently 9, 10, and 11 are going to be a comprehensive trilogy.
It's the same
like they're
going
to be
it's
all
the
like, one big story.
The same what?
Yeah, it's the same thing with Avatar. I actually love the Avatar movie, but he's making 4 more.
What?
Like what? What are we going to do? What story?
Stop!
That right there just... Never mind.
Stop!
Really?
9, 10, and 11? What?
I mean, it's the same thing with Fast and the Furious. It's like...
That's rumored.
You gotta stop.
There's no point in making that many. Just make a different story.
Right? Because Vin Diesel is awesome. Like, why can't you just like, okay, let's be done with this. Let's do something new.
Yeah, like just make a new project in general. Stop letting this number keep going.
Yeah, I'm like,
just make a new project where it's basically the same thing, but you can title it differently.
Right?
That's what they did with Hobbs and Shaw.
Hobbs and Shaw happened because Vin Diesel... didn't have the creative input on Hobbs and Shaw and got pissed off because it was going to be another one of his movies.
Yeah, it was meant to be a Fast and Furious.
Yes, and it became Hobbs and Shaw because they wouldn't give him creative freedom with it, and he stepped away.
Yeah. I still don't know how they got the rights to it, though.
Because he stepped away and was like, whatever, do whatever you're going to do.
Yeah. He could have just canceled the project.
He could have. But I don't think...
It is actually a Fast and Furious movie.
It is.
Yeah,
it's
that's
the
same
thing, but he stepped away from the project. He didn't want nothing to do with it because...
Yeah, he was not an executive producer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was some drama with that movie. He did not like The Rock for a bit.
Which is sad because honestly...
Which is, I believe is why he's not in 9, right?
Right, because of whatever went on with him and Dwayne Johnson, which is sad because Dwayne Johnson's a fabulous person, and I don't know what the fuck the problem is.
He wanted to have creative freedom.
Yeah, well, sometimes we don't get what we want.
Those are two massive people to butt heads.
Right.
They're both.
I think it's more of like he felt like Dwayne Johnson was going to take over the franchise, which he kind of did.
I do. I feel like he felt like there was a direct competition
in a
project that's always been his.
Yeah.
Which is fair.
Toe stepping hurts.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say, though, that Hobbs and Shaw is probably one of the best.
It was actually really good.
It's just like what we were talking about with the staleness. It's one of those things where it was just a completely new creative juice that was put into it. I watched Hobbs and Shaw and I was like, okay, this is good.
I
haven't said that since the first time I watched Tokyo Drift.
Yeah.
And then after that, I was like, okay, I'm done with the series. I didn't watch Fast and the Furious. I didn't watch 5,
I did.
6, or 7.
I've seen them all.
I love movies. And I loved it when they, you know, Hobbs and Shaw were great impacts in the saga.
Yeah.
I don't even know why they're bad guys. All I know is that I like the movie Hans. I did not watch the movies where they were bad guys.
The interaction between them, between Jason Statham and Dwayne Johnson, was hilarious in that movie. I loved it.
It was pure chemistry.
Yes.
And I would love to go back and watch.
You can watch it forever.
The special features.
Yes.
And see if there's any bloopers on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Buddy Cop is always the best thing. It's the same thing with Falcon Winter Soldier right now.
Yeah.
Buddy Cop is always the best movie and show platform ever. There's so much you can do with just two butting heads that eventually have to get along.
Yeah.
All right. We are down to the last 5 minutes of the show.
Yep.
I want to thank all of my hosts tonight. Miss Angel.
Yep.
Alex.
Yep. It's a pleasure.
And Austin for joining us.
Mm-hmm. There's going to be a lot of noise if I kept
that. I don't think he needed to just walk in. He just got texted. I was like, he's going to walk in.
Yeah.
All right. Next Sunday.
Possibly.
See, that's why I wasn't going to announce it, because we don't know yet.
Okay.
We don't know if Nobody Knows is coming back this Friday or next Friday, but he is working on a new co-host. Stay tuned to the Nobody Knows Facebook page.
Yes.
And the Wicked Curiosity Media Facebook page.
Yes.
For updates and announcements.
Yeah, because he may be changing hours, so we just need to find out.
Yeah. Next Sunday, as I mentioned earlier on in the show, we are going to be reviewing the new Mortal Kombat movie.
Can we do that for like an hour and then review Nobody for the other hour?
Nobody was pretty good.
Okay, so the reason why we can't do that is because it's still a rental, and it's still considered a theatrical release. I understand that Mortal Kombat is too, but it's available for more people to watch on HBO Max platform. But I was actually impressed with that movie.
Yeah.
I didn't know we had a rule about that.
Yes.
I just want to review a movie I liked.
It was a good movie, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We will review it, though, when it comes out on video. Next Tuesday.
Yes, sir.
From Grace Podcast.
Yep.
And then back to Cinephiles on the next Wednesday.
Yep.
All right. I want to say thank you to all of our listeners, all of our followers, and all of our supporters. We truly, deeply appreciate you guys. We love you guys. We wouldn't be able to continue doing this without you guys. We would literally just sit in our living room and do the same thing. But now you can hear our voices. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, support the veterans, fire, police, and EMS. They're out there every day putting their lives on the line to protect you and to save you and to keep you healthy. Don't judge the 99% by the 1%. There are really, really, really good ones out there. Be safe this weekend, especially. Don't be a victim. You know, protect yourself. And as always, be safe, be smart. We want you back here every night that we broadcast on Wicked Curiosity Media. Every Sunday night for Movie of the Week, every Tuesday night for Falling from Grace Podcast, every Wednesday night for Cinephiles, and every Friday for Note by Note. It has been a pleasure tonight. I hope you all have a great rest of your Wednesday night, and a great rest of your week. We'll see you Sunday.
Have a good night, everybody.
Good night.
Y'all have a good night. Where are you? There you are. Good night.
Dripping down is just you and me. You cut me off and say you're tired of talking. Not as if we can't agree, but you've lost your will to fight. You're packing up all your things to leave. will be our last words. Then the chance will be lost, and I ain't too proud. Too if you proud. Loved me, you would hold me and never let me go. If you loved me, you would tell me you never want me to be alone. If you cared at all, you
if you love me.